no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hegstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Education Nation. I'm your host, Rebecca Hegstrom, and I'm here again in studio with Mark Durkin, our co-host and executive producer of the show. Good morning.
And good morning to you again, Rebecca.
Yeah. I think we are all probably a little bit exhausted from maybe the 4th of July, huh?
The time keeps going quicker and the days are getting busier.
Exactly. Yes, I hope that all of our listeners had a wonderful celebration celebrating this great country of ours on our Independence Day.
Yes.
And we're glad to be back with you again this Saturday. And we actually want to welcome back a guest that we had a few weeks ago on our show named Howard Root. Howard was with us building the case as to why a college education is not necessarily needed in order to fulfill many of the professional dreams that students have over the course of their academic careers. But this time, we invited Howard back because we wanted him to share his harrowing experience that he had almost cost him his business and honestly, even his personal freedom. So Howard is recently retired, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, as the CEO of Vascular Solutions. And in just a 15-year period, he went from an idea for a single medical device to a company that had created over 500 American jobs, including more than 50 new medical devices.
And despite the success, it really only took one ex-employee that was fueled by revenge and an insatiable desire for money to almost succeed in not only destroying the company that Howard built, but to foster a lie that really dragged the federal government into the mix that also threatened to put Howard Root behind bars for a long time. He wrote a book chronicling this distressing experience. The title of it is Cardiac Arrest, Five Heart-Stopping Years as a CEO on the Fed's Hit List. We welcome back to Education Nation to discuss the case, Mr. Howard Root. Good morning to you.
Good morning, and thanks for inviting me back, Rebecca and Mark. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, before we get to the specifics, I'm sorry, did you want to?
I was just going to say, I love the title of your book because I think it is so apropos, given the fact that you were CEO of Vascular Solutions.
Yes. Yeah, we started with heart attack, and that was pretty good, but cardiac arrest and then a picture of me with handcuffs up there. One of my friend's daughter saw him reading the book, and there's the picture of me in handcuffs, and she said, So why does that man have handcuffs on? And the dad said, because he was unjustly accused of a crime. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, what can we do to help him?
Oh,
I said, from the mouths of babes come the truest statement.
That is so true. Oh, that's very sweet.
She'll get a good Christmas gift this year.
Yeah, there you go. You'll make sure of it.
Yep.
Howard, this turned into a 5-year criminal prosecution attempt. I want for you to please just tell our listeners at the top here a little bit about Vascular Solutions, what idea that you had for the creation of the company, and how that idea really took off for you in the company.
Right. Well, I'm a native Minnesotan, and I was actually trained as a lawyer and went to a law firm in downtown Minneapolis for about 5 years working as a corporate lawyer. Decided I didn't really like working in a corporate law firm. I wanted to work for a corporation where I didn't have to bill by the hour but could work with a team building something. So I got a job in a medical device company out in the western suburbs, worked there for 6 years. And at the end of that, I thought, you know, I've learned enough of the business. I know the finance. I know the law that I think I can start my own medical device company, kind of the American dream, if you will. So I quit the job. I found a doctor with an idea. I took $300 of my money, started Vascular Solutions, had to raise a lot of money from others to get it going, raised $1 million right at the start from people I had known from my legal experience and putting together a business plan, developed that idea into a product that took about $25 million over the next 2 years, got it approved by the FDA. We're going to start selling it. So we had to hire a sales force. That took about $50 million, and we went public in 2000. And then from that first product, we, over the next 10 years, created 50 more products. We expanded our employment from just me at the beginning to about 400 employees by around 2011, and we turned profitable. So it was one of those things that you find what you really want to do, and developing medical devices is what I was really made to do rather than being a lawyer. I was about 50 years old right then. I just turned 50 in 2011. Company was profitable, growing. I thought, I'm going to do this for another 15 to 20 years. It'll be a great capstone milestone of a career. And right then, I get a subpoena from the federal government alleging me and my company of engaging in criminal violations of the U.S. Code. And it was just a stunning document to receive. I'm at the airport, and my assistant calls me and says, there's a subpoena here for documents from the Western District of Texas in San Antonio. They're alleging criminal violations. And I thought, well,
he must have been shocked.
Yeah. It's you're saying criminal violations? We had never received so much as a warning letter from the FDA. There's nothing in our history. I was an Eagle Scout Sunday school teacher growing up. You know,
squeaky clean.
It's
squeaky
not the, clean. Yeah, the worst thing I did was I went 45 in a 30 zone in 1999. You know, this is not the kind of guy that expects to get arrested. Now, I wasn't arrested and thrown in jail. But so I called the lawyers and we said, what is going on? And you're right. As you said in the prelude, it was a disgruntled former employee who had it out for me because he had done something wrong. He left the company. He quit because he did not get promoted.
Right.
And wanted revenge. So he created a fable that the company had been engaged in a $20 million fraud with the government as being the target, and the U.S. attorneys in San Antonio bought off on that fable and were on their way to investigating me as the CEO of the company of being a felon. And there was no way that we were going to shake them off of their mistaken belief. They actually talked to that whistleblower, that disgruntled employee, for 7 months before they sent the first document to us.
Really?
We gave them over 1 million pages of documents in return, and they continued down their merry way. This was all over one product, one of those 50 products, a product that made up 0.1% of our sales, had been approved by the FDA 8 separate times, and had never harmed a single patient.
You got to repeat that.
So we have 50 medical devices. Yeah. One medical device makes up 0.1% of our sales, so 500,000 in total sales.
Right.
Approved by the FDA 8 separate times, never harmed a single patient, and they're claiming I'm engaged in a conspiracy for a $20 million fraud on the government.
Crazy.
It takes a lot of creative writing to come up with that complaint.
Right.
And they were so misguided, so off base. They just didn't even understand the law. They didn't understand the product. They didn't understand our people. But the one person they understood was the whistleblower.
Yeah.
And he had convinced them by pulling out 2 documents he had received, which allegedly had documented our salespeople saying the wrong word. This all boiled down to the words spoken by a salesperson. They said the product could be legally sold in the U.S., only for saphenous varicose veins. And this is a treatment for varicose veins.
Mm-hmm.
Saphenous is the main vein running down the leg.
Mm-hmm.
And perforators connect up with the saphenous vein and also can become varicose.
Mm-hmm.
So what they alleged was our salespeople were talking about using it to treat perforator varicose veins when they should have been using it and talking about using it to treat saphenous varicose veins. Now, it could be sold for either. It can be used for either.
And it's you even had approval for either.
Yeah, and in the end, actually, we had approval for treating all varicose veins, but they said you don't have specific approval. We had 8 separate approvals, but we didn't have the specific approval for perforator varicose veins. Never mind, that is under a non-binding FDA guidance document that says that that's what they want you to have, but it's not what the law required. We didn't actually get into that level of detail till the trial 5 years later.
Wow.
But at this point, these prosecutors were so intent on finding a CEO of a public medical device company that they could go after and get put in prison that they went after me. They were looking to make a criminal. They were not looking to investigate a crime.
Yeah.
They even said that. They said, we're looking for a case when the conduct is top-down and widespread. Top-down meaning there's a CEO involved in every decision of the company, which I was because I was the founder.
Mm-hmm.
Widespread meaning there's a nationwide sales force. We had that. And there's not that many medical device companies our size that have both those things.
Right.
So we were targeted by the government because of who we were, not because of what we had done.
Yeah, unbelievable. And I know when we talked before the show that a lot of this originated from the Yates Amendment, or the Yates Memo.
Right.
Do you want to share with our listeners what the Yates Memo was?
Right. So this whole investigation started 2011. My trial was over in 2016. So this was a Obama Department of Justice investigation prosecution. Sally Yates, you may know her from her most recent thing where she decided to disobey President Trump and had to get fired. But before that, she was a deputy attorney general under Eric Holder. And she had been tasked with writing a memo to all the prosecutors in the U.S. of who they want to make a criminal target. And it's called the Yates Memo because Sally Yates wrote it. And it says that when they start a whistleblower investigation, so when a disgruntled former employee complains about a company, the civil attorneys, the ones who are investigating that civil complaint, have to turn it over to their criminal counterparts in the Department of Justice, the ones investigating crimes, to see if they can make a crime against the CEO of the company right from the outset. So this was originally a whistleblower civil lawsuit that immediately became a criminal complaint, and the first subpoena we got was from the criminal lawyers. So they're instructed to do that. Now, once they start an investigation, they're told that their main target is the person. Because they have had too much abuse from the left, and political left in this country, that when they're going after corporations, no CEO is going in prison, going to prison. Mm. So they want to find the CEO to put behind bars rather than try to go after the corporation. So you combine that together, whistleblower creates a nonsensical complaint, the criminal prosecutors pick it up, they're instructed under the Yates memo to go after the CEO, they want to find a top-down, widespread, nationwide organization, they lock in Vascular Solutions. And even one person during the pendency of our case, before we got to trial, a government high official said they had handpicked this case and went on the offensive because they had gotten beat in two prior cases in this subject.
Oh my goodness.
Going to show someone in medical device that they're the boss.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Oh, the pride, the arrogance, really.
Well, that's right.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
For 20 years, I ran a public medical device company, so I dealt with hedge fund managers. And I dealt with cardiologists. Yeah. Those guys, generally guys, have huge egos. Mm-hmm. None of them could compare to the egos on the prosecutors. I've never seen egos that large on any person that I've met. And these are prosecutors within the Department of Justice. I'll quote what they said to one of my defense attorneys. They said, "We've invested our blood, sweat, and tears in this investigation, and at this point, we need a body."
Which means
because they had worked so hard, they needed to find someone in the corporation to put behind bars. That body was me, as well as three other employees who had decided not to testify the way the prosecutors wanted them to testify, but instead stuck to the truth,
right.
Which was that we had done nothing criminal.
Right. Never mind the fact that these were real people. You are a real person. Your employees are real people. That these prosecutors really didn't care, that they said, at this point, we just need a body. How dare anyone allow someone to be put into prison just simply for their career success?
That's right. I mean, the Department of Justice is about justice, but they calculate a return on investment. They say for every healthcare fraud investigation, they make $6.10 for every dollar invested. Now, you can't use
money.
Yeah, it's about money. It's about greed. It's about hubris. You know, two things you would never expect in the Department of Justice. But back in the 40s, there was an attorney general, Robert H. Jackson. He did a speech called The Federal Prosecutor, and he gave it to all the U.S. attorneys. And he said, in that room at that time was assembled the largest peacetime force known to humankind because they had the power over everyone in America. He said in 1942, the average citizen in America could be indicted on any crime any day. If that was arguably true then, it's clearly true now.
Oh, my goodness.
So the prosecutor has to have their ego in check.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they can be the biggest source of injustice in America.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you go from 1942 to today, regulations and laws have increased.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutors' egos have gone up. And now the Department of Justice is telling them, instructing them, you go after this class of person and you find someone to put behind bars. Mm. That is a powder keg that exploded on me at Vascular Solutions.
Unbelievable. We're so thankful that you're actually sitting here as a free man today.
Yeah, it's a small room here, but it doesn't have bars on it.
Right.
I'm not happy for that. Thanks.
You know, I'm wondering if we need to take a little bit of a break here, Mark. It's hard to take a break because you have everybody on the edge of their seats. But when we come back after the break, we'd like to hear more about kind of the case itself and maybe some of the things that were said to those three other people in your company that decided to stick to the truth.
Right.
I know that there's quite a story even around at least one of those witnesses as well. So when we come back from the break, you'll hear more from Howard Root on his story, cardiac arrest.
We don't need no education.
And welcome back to Education Nation. I am your co-host, Mark Durkin, along with host Rebecca Hagstrom. And we are joined once again, a special treat here in studio, Howard Root, who is the author of Cardiac Arrest, 5 Heart-Stopping Years as a CEO on the Fed's Hit List, as it pertained to his company, Vascular Solutions. And so we're going to continue this conversation here with Howard right now. The federal government, they have locked in on you as the CEO, bringing forth these supposed charges of fraud. What was the methodology, if you will, of how to really go after the federal government, and how were they kind of specifically coming after you?
Well, I think every listener can appreciate that when the government has you locked in mm-hmm. on and they want to put you behind bars, that it's going to cost you a lot of money and take you a lot of time, and they're going to bring the big artillery. So I'll give you the numbers. So for us, this started in 2011. It took me 5 years to get through trial and the not guilty verdict.
5 years.
During that 5 years, we hired 14 law firms, hiring over 120 lawyers, because the government goes after not only me and the company, they also go after the board of directors. They also go after up to over 50 of our customers and employees. And each one of those needs to have a lawyer representing them in order to make sure that they don't get into trouble. That cost us $25 million. And
wow.
I probably wasted $5 to $10 million, but I don't know which 5 or 10 I wasted. When you get into it, you're just hiring lawyer after lawyer. The top lawyer billed out at $1,300 an hour.
Oh,
now, you know, there's a reason why they're that expensive, is they're that good. But you quickly appreciate that if you don't have that kind of money in this justice system, you are SOL.
Mm-hmm.
You are not going to be able to fight the government on $1 million. So now after I won, I get calls and emails from people going through the same thing I've gone through. And they say, well, what can I do? And I have to ask them a really sickening question right up front, which is, how much money do you have?
Mm-hmm.
And when they say they've got $100,000, I say, you need to plead guilty. Because you're not going to get a better offer, and even if you didn't do it, just take the punishment and be done with it. And I don't see any other option out there unless we change the system. But let's go back into what happened to me. Is I'm sitting there, and we get the subpoena, and we're involved in the investigation, and they come to the company with a resolution, which is I have to plead guilty and leave the company. And we all agree that's not going to happen. Not only that, they wanted 3 other employees fired and excluded from working anywhere in healthcare. The federal government has this power that if they've determined internally that you've committed a fraud, they can exclude you from working with any healthcare provider that takes a Medicare patient, which is every hospital in America.
Right. Yeah.
So your career is over, and that's not even a judicial remedy. That's an administrative remedy. They can do that on their own volition just in a day, and then it's done.
Without a case. Without a winning verdict.
No, not at all. So they tell my employees is, you have to be aware that we can destroy your career if you do not testify the way we want you to testify. On here, we will read you the testimony of another witness, and that's what yours has to say.
My goodness.
Whoa. It's things you don't...
Talk about stonewalling and steamrolling and just... Really,
that's a hostage situation right there.
It is. It's really disconcerting to think that the very government that you thought was designed to protect us as individuals is actually the one that is perpetrating this type of illegal activity on you and your employees.
Well, the worst one was one employee, a female employee, who they brought in and said that you should be aware that the federal government has power over your rights and privileges provided to your natural born son.
Oh, my goodness.
So they're trying to get her to say the words of what we were instructing our sales reps around a product. Remember, this is about a product that made up 0.1% of our sales, was FDA cleared, and never harmed a patient. And they're threatening the employee's child to get the testimony that they want to prove a whistleblower's fable that was created years ago.
Mm. Wow.
So, you know, the employees
really
are under incredible pressure. The grand jury process is onerous on anyone who walks into it. One employee actually got indicted for obstruction of justice because he said that he was selling the product in the best interest of the patients, not to make money.
What?
And they thought that was obstruction. If he did not admit that he was a money-grubbing salesperson, the federal prosecutors wanted him to be thrown in prison.
My goodness, how can they call what they really don't know, which is his true motivations for why he works and does his job. They're calling that obstruction of justice because they don't want to believe that he could actually have a good motive for wanting to be a salesperson, which is helping people.
Right, right. In the testimony at trial, that one of our sales reps was up there and the prosecutor said, now you work for a for-profit corporation, don't you?
For-profit, because that's a bad word these
right.
days.
You don't make a dime helping your friends unless you sell devices, do you?
Oh.
They don't pay you $191,000 a year just to help your friends, do they?
Oh my
now, that
gosh.
Prosecutor, she was married to a doctor. She lives in about a 5,000 square foot house with a nice swimming pool, and she's complaining about my sales rep making $191,000 a year.
So she's a hypocrite on top of it all.
On top of it all. It's just stunning when you see this, and it's all in a bubble culture within this U.S. Attorney's Office and really within the Department of Justice as a whole. Not every prosecutor is this way, but there are enough of them like this that we have a serious problem within the justice system in the U.S.
Wow.
But we were fortunate. We were the ones who had $25 million. We had a company that was strong to withstand the attacks. We had employees who would not roll. Mm-hmm. We had a board of directors that kept me running this for 15 months between indictment and the date of the trial. Mm. So we got up to the trial date, and all of a sudden, everything flipped. One day, everything flipped from us getting beaten up by guys who had all the power in the world to where they were exposed as being the incompetent attorneys they were, the prosecutors.
Finally. I bet you felt finally. Let's hear more about that. So you're at trial. This is when now?
This is in February of 2016.
Okay, so only a year and a few months ago, actually.
Feels like yesterday.
Right.
Remember it clearly.
And this is 5 years after the initial letter saying that you were, you know, being indicted on criminal activity.
Yeah, 5 years after the first subpoena for documents. Mm-hmm. 15 months after the indictment, I've had the Star Tribune newspaper broadcast that I'm a CEO under criminal conspiracy charge, and they're surprised that I'm still running my company, innocent until proven guilty. Well, that works in the final sentence, but not the process. The process is your punishment. That comes from day one. So you're sitting there in the chair in the courtroom waiting to see the prosecutors start their opening statement, and the main prosecutor gets up there and just lays a big egg. He talks about patient harm and admits that no one's been harmed by this device. He talks about the FDA but doesn't explain the approval process. And in the end, all he's trying to do is bloody me up as being a former lawyer who's making a lot of money as a CEO.
And that's a crime, though.
And that's a crime. And then they start calling their witnesses. It gets even worse. They call one doctor who says that the product is safe and effective, helps patients, and this risk that the prosecutor talked about is completely hypothetical and never seen. That blew up. Then they call one FDA witness who gets up there and says, oh, yeah, they always had the approval for treating all varicose veins. They didn't have the specific approval for treating perforator varicose veins, but that's only under a non-binding FDA guidance document, which is not the law. So I've had 5 years of prosecution over a sales rep saying a word that violates a non-binding FDA guidance document, and the prosecutors witness just admitted
just
this.
Just admitted this.
You want to drop the microphone and just walk out of
the
courtroom.
Right, right.
So it kept going on like that. And then they got done with their case, and the judge turns to us and says, your chance, call witnesses. And we go, no, we're good. We're good. We got all we need.
They just won the case for us.
Yeah. We're fine. We're fine. We can go to closing arguments. We go to closing arguments, and the jury comes back, deliberates for a short period of time, not guilty on all charges. One juror emails me immediately after the verdict saying, what the government did to me, my company, and my employees is nothing short of criminal. She wanted to put the prosecutors behind bars and let me go free.
Wow. And this is from one of the jurors.
One of the jurors, who sat through the whole thing. I was looking at her. She was, she actually started to cry during our closing statement when our prosecutor or our defense attorney says, this is not America,
right,
when prosecutors can take something that's so clearly wrong and prosecute a company, a CEO, and the employees on these kind of charges.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the saving grace of the criminal justice system is the jury.
Right.
The judge was not very helpful. The prosecutors are on the other side, but the jurors are always looking out for what's right and what's just.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But like you said, the only reason why you got to the point of a jury is because you had the money to continue fighting it and getting it to that point.
Excellent point. That's exactly the main takeaway, is it took me $25 million in 5 years to get to the point where someone would step in. Before that time, we appealed to Maine Justice up to the highest levels within the Department of Justice. 1 hour meeting. No. Kick it back down to the prosecutors, deal with them. I appealed it to Senator Amy Klobuchar, who I worked with for 5 years as a lawyer in the 80s. We worked at the same law firm. I'd known her for over 25 years.
Huh.
She said there's a longstanding rule that senators cannot get involved in ongoing DOJ investigations.
Goodness.
Which is wrong.
There's no rule.
Because our attorneys used to work in DOJ. They got letters from senators all the time. But that was a way Amy could say, I can't, rather than I won't.
Right. She didn't want to have to
rock the boat. against the establishment.
Pristine. Especially against the Obama administration.
Right. And that's why we say that about Amy, is that 60% of Minnesotans like Amy Klobuchar, and the other 40% used to work with Amy Klobuchar.
that's quite the statement.
What to do, and this was one of the things she was not going to take.
Yeah.
And so when I got done with the case and walked away, I realized two things. One is that what I went through, I don't want to go through again. And because I need to speak out about it, I wasn't going to put myself at risk of that. And the way to avoid that is to sell the company. So I told the board after an appropriate amount of cooling down, it took me 6 months to the point where I could convince them I was rational and not emotional.
Right.
And said, let's sell the company. We did that summer of last year. We finally sold it. February 17th of 2017, we sold the company. And I did very well for it.
Yes, you did.
But I retired at the age of 56 when I thought I would be 66. And there's probably another 100 medical devices that I won't develop in years that I should. The second thing, I think even more important than that, though, is for me, is to turn my case into my cause. And my cause is now to change the criminal justice system, to go to D.C., to lobby the new administration, to get an audience with Attorney General Jeff Sessions, to see if we can get the culture changed in the Department of Justice, because people are the process. We don't have to change the laws and the regulations. I'd certainly love to reduce them, but we have to change the attitude of prosecutors away from convicting people and toward getting justice for people. And in my case, it wasn't about justice. It was about getting a win, a return on investment, or a scalp. And that has to get driven out of the Department of Justice.
Absolutely. I find it, I know if I was a listener hearing this story for the first time, because the day I heard this first time, I literally shook my head and thought, how can there be so little concern for you, you know, from the Justice Department? Why can they be so caught up in their own careers and making money that they honestly don't care that they would put an innocent person behind bars and take money away and a company away? I find that just so un-American. Well, and, you know, you think about our Statue of Liberty.
Every constitutional right sounds like it was violated in this case.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's there's a statute that you can sue to get your expenses back. But if you're a rich person with a net worth over $2 million or a corporation with a net worth over $7 million, you're excluded from that statute. Now, if it takes you $25 million to get your rights exonerated, you're not going to be in that poor category and then use the statute. So it never gets used. You think that you can go against the prosecutors for violating my constitutional rights? They have immunity. They cannot be sued for prosecuting people.
Because they're government.
Right.
And that's what needs to be changed.
Oh, that should be changed for sure.
And so the only thing you can do is try to get a misconduct investigation within the Department of Justice, but you have prosecutors judging the misconduct of other prosecutors. A little bit of a conflict of interest there. So now we're trying to get the Senate Judiciary Committee or the new Department of Justice to take care of it.
Wow. Sounds like there's a lot of cronyism going on inside the Justice Department as well.
Drain the swamp.
Yes, drain the swamp. Exactly. Yeah, good point there, Mark.
That's a deep swamp.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, Howard, we are very thankful that you did prevail and that you're here telling your story and that you're out telling your story. And I would recommend that our listeners go purchase your book. Can they get it on Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's also on my website, howardroot.com, Cardiac Arrest.
And Howard is also available for speaking engagements. I know that you've done quite a bit of that. You spoke at the American Experiment. He's an engaging speaker. I've listened to him before tell his story. And this story needs to get out. So I would encourage all of our listeners to pick up a copy of his book, Cardiac Arrest, Howard Root. And join us again next week as we come back and tackle another conversation in education at Education Nation.